It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Last year, a private college in northern Wisconsin closed its doors due to financial challenges. By the time Northland College in Ashland closed, it had borrowed $22 million from its endowment to fund operations.
Now, a judge is set to sign off on the college's plan to dole out what little money remains. As Daniel Kading reports, some donors say the college violated their trusts and potentially the law.
Brett Norgaard remembers his son Bjorn as a kind and adventurous kid. While attending Northland College in Ashland, his son volunteered for a local nonprofit group shoveling snow and mowing lawns for seniors. But in 2011, a teenage driver killed the 23-year-old in a hit-and-run crash. After his son's death, Norgaard received a letter from the family of one elderly couple about the time they shared with Bjorn.
The husband had had a stroke and he was not able to speak, but he was alert. And Bjorn would sit down with him and talk about hunting and stuff. And family
and friends created a scholarship fund at Northland in Bjorn's name, along with a second fund that provided financial support to students for various activities. Over the years, Norgaard says they donated at least $156,000 between the two endowed funds. But now, most of the money is gone.
We threw everything into these two scholarships in terms of keeping his memory alive. So it's like a gut punch.
Cars roll by on a busy state highway as I'm standing in front of Northland College in Ashland. Earlier this year, the Northland Board of Trustees revealed it had borrowed $22 million from its restricted endowment to fund operations. It asked a court to release restrictions and approve its plan for doling out roughly $3 million that remained. In a recent hearing, an Iron County judge found the board complied with state law on repurposing funds in line with donor wishes. That law is known as the Uniform Prudent Management of Institutional Funds Act. But Norgaard says the college didn't follow the family's intent under the law, which oversees how institutions manage endowment funds. Northland Board Chair Ted Bristol said the college tried to balance the interests of all involved. In 2024, former Northland President Chad Dayton told WPR that declining enrollment and increasing costs forced the college to borrow from its endowment.
Northland is no longer in a position to rely upon its endowment to cover operational expenses.
Northland's attorney, Courtney Schultz, told the court that the law allowed the college to loan itself money from pooled endowment funds, and it borrowed from restricted funds between 2012 and 2019. Ben Orzeski is chief counsel for the Uniform Law Commission. He says the law doesn't say an institution can't loan itself money.
But it would be difficult to structure a type of loan to an institution that would be deemed prudent under the law.
Susan Gary is a retired professor with the University of Oregon School of Law who drafted changes to the law in the early 2000s. She says the attorney general would have the right to review whether violations occurred, but oversight is often limited.
They, of course, have limited resources to investigate things. And so the problem now is, yes, there may have been a violation, but that doesn't really help the fact that the money is gone.
The Wisconsin Department of Justice didn't comment about its review of Northland's funds and the college's request to release restrictions on them. Assistant Attorney General Michael Morris has said he found no clear violations of the law. Rocky Barker with the nonprofit Sigurd Olson Environmental Institute says it's set to receive around $900,000 of remaining funds. Barker says he trusts the review conducted by the Attorney General's office.
They thought that Northland was handling this legally and properly.
But Norgaard and representatives of the nonprofit Mead Witter Foundation say irregularities in Northland's financial reporting and management of funds suggest the college violated the law. Norgaard wants the Attorney General's office to take another look.
I'm optimistic that if the truth comes out, that justice will, somehow prevail.
Norgaard and Mead Witter fear the case will have a chilling effect on anyone who donates to endowed funds, and students will suffer most. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is WPR News. The number of people in Wisconsin state prisons serving sentences for drunken driving is soaring. That's according to a new report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum.
The researchers found that the number of convictions for operating while intoxicated, or OWI, has more than quadrupled since 2000, hitting a record high of nearly 2,900 people behind bars in 2024.
The report says that harsher penalties have led to that rise, and even though alcohol consumption is declining overall, people who use alcohol frequently are drinking significantly more than before.
In just a bit, we'll get reaction to these findings from a criminal defense attorney in Milwaukee. But first, for a look at the report, we have Joe Pietrangelo, research director at the Wisconsin Policy Forum, and an author on the report titled Impairment to Imprisonment. Joe, welcome back to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me.
Your data reveals that a growing number of people are going to prison for operating while intoxicated in Wisconsin. How could an OWI conviction lead to a prison sentence in the state?
Well, so Wisconsin has policies for each OWI offense, operating while intoxicated offense. So a first offense is treated as a civil infraction, so it's not a criminal charge. And so people with a first OWI offense typically do not spend time in jail or prison. But as people have more than one offense, and especially as you get to a fourth offense or higher, your chances of going to prison are much higher. Wisconsin has made the penalties harsher for fourth and subsequent OWIs in recent years. So that is leading to people spending longer periods of time in prison.
And your report, it outlines a couple possible reasons for the increase of people in prison for OWI. So you mentioned there some stricter laws and an increase in drinking alcohol. How can you walk us through how you came to these conclusions that these are the potential causes?
We can't really measure the impact of specific changes to the increase in incarceration, but we interviewed a number of people across systems, Department of Corrections, the Department of Transportation, the Department of Justice, to get perspectives on what's happening throughout the system. And we also talked with public health experts to really understand the drinking behavior in the state. And that's where the combination of talking to all these different individuals, we gathered that some of the key factors were the policy changes, as well as certain individuals drinking more and driving while intoxicated more than they were in the past.
Okay, then moving on to the policy side and the movement you see there, you know, fourth offense OWI and higher among the strictest penalties in the nation here in Wisconsin. How have laws changed?
So what we did is we compared the penalties for each OWI offense between Wisconsin and all of the neighboring states, so the five states that surround Wisconsin. And so that's where we found, as I mentioned, Wisconsin, for our first OWI offense, it's a civil infraction. It's not a criminal charge. Wisconsin is the only state that treats a first OWI offense like that in the region. So in all of the other five states that surround us, a first OWI is a criminal misdemeanor. And so often a person may serve some time in a local jail, for example. In Wisconsin, that's not the case. But as you go up to a second, third, fourth, especially a fourth and subsequent offense, Wisconsin has tightened those laws in a number of ways. There have been several policy changes that have extended fourth and subsequent offenses, and also those that involve aggravating factors, such as if a youth was in the vehicle, if somebody was injured or killed in the crash. So there were several policy changes that have extended those penalties. And that's where, when we compare Wisconsin with those neighboring states on fourth and subsequent offenses, Wisconsin and Illinois have the toughest penalties in terms of longer typical sentences than the other states.
The increase in prison sentences, it's affecting some specific populations. Can you talk about the people who are more frequently incarcerated for OWI?
Yes, we saw several trends that were troubling in the data on incarceration. First of all, older adults are much more likely to be incarcerated for an OWI than they were in the past. We found that the OWI incarceration rate for adults 55 and over has more than tripled since 2010. Mm-hmm. So that was a significant increase. We also see more women incarcerated for OWIs than in the past. However, women are still a small minority of those incarcerated for OWI. Back in 2000, they accounted for less than 7%. In 2025, they were more than 11% of the total. So it's a slow but steady increase. So it is a concern. And then we also see significant racial disparities among those who are incarcerated for OWI. The American Indian population has the highest incarceration rate for OWIs. That's been a longer term trend. But we also found that whereas the Black incarceration rate was very similar to the white incarceration rate in the past, it has now grown quite a bit, the Black incarceration rate for OWI, where it is now about double the rate for the white population.
Mm. You offer some solutions, like expanding access to substance abuse programs, some alternatives. One involves taxation, about the state's beer tax. Why might raising that tax help lower the incarceration rate?
So again, the public health experts we consulted with really suggested that or pointed to evidence that the cost of alcohol can have a significant impact on drinking behavior. And so Wisconsin, we found, has it taxes beer at $2 per 31-gallon barrel. And that has been the same since 1977. So that's one alcohol tax. There are separate taxes on wine and liquor. There is quite a bit of evidence that, making alcohol more costly, also reducing access in other ways, such as by limiting the hours during which alcohol can be purchased. Those are strategies that can reduce excess alcohol consumption.
Joe, thank you for sharing this report with us.
Thank you for having me.
Joe Pietrangelo is research director at the Wisconsin Policy Forum and an author of a new report that looks into OWI incarceration in the state. To look further at OWI cases and their impact, we have Deja Vishny, a criminal defense attorney in Milwaukee. She served as an adjunct professor at Marquette University Law School for 20 years. Deja, welcome to the program.
Glad to be here, and thanks for having me on.
What strikes you about this report and the increase in people incarcerated for operating while intoxicated?
Well, there were two things I thought about. And what jumped to mind first and foremost is that Wisconsin has, generally speaking, a really high incarceration rate. And the nationwide trend of mass incarceration is particularly aggravated in the state of Wisconsin. So when I looked at this, the fact that there were more people in prison for DUI in the state of Wisconsin than in other states was not surprising to me. The second thing that really stood out to me was what I might call disproportionate minority confinement. In other words, the report shows that Native Americans and Black Americans are incarcerated at the highest rate in Wisconsin, at a higher rate than white people. Native Americans are incarcerated at a rate four times higher than whites and twice as high as Black people, who in turn are incarcerated at twice the rate of white people. That is consistent with incarceration in general in the state of Wisconsin, and it's an enormous problem.
You've talked about the cost of incarceration for society. What do you view as the cost burden of prison sentences for OWI convictions?
One of the reasons to be concerned about mass incarceration is it is not effective for public safety. Most of the problems with mass incarceration have to do with the length of sentences, because the longer sentences and the more people spending more time in longer sentences in prison raises the prison population. When you have repeat DUI offenders, it's clearly not having an impact. You know, most people who get a DUI, I think, stop after their first one. They take an Uber, they quit driving, they're compliant with the law. Maybe some of them get two, but once you start to get more and more people getting DUIs, there doesn't seem to be a real deterrent effect. And our society, or I would say prosecutors and judges, are very heavily focused on the aspect of sentencing that's called punishment. We want to punish these people. What I think is a more effective route to curbing DUI and repeat DUI offenders is to look at public safety. What can be done to enhance public safety in DUIs apparently isn't working with a certain population who keep getting repeated DUIs.
In terms of this public safety, and we can talk about alternatives to incarceration, but when you look at these Department of Transportation statistics, in 2024, 163 people are killed, 3,500 people injured due to intoxicated driving crashes. How can policymakers balance the needs of the offender, but also the potential victims here?
Well, I think obviously policymakers are going to be interested in they should be interested, and hopefully they are, in preserving life and reducing DUI. So there are solutions that are mentioned in the report. Higher alcohol taxes seems to be one solution. Reduction of the number of alcohol licenses. But one of the things that really stood out to me, well, there were a couple of things. One was that only half of Wisconsin counties, or about half, have drug, or what we call drunk driving courts, which are treatment courts. According to the report, there's 38 of those statewide, but we have 72 counties. So that means in half the counties, we aren't seeing a treatment alternative. The other thing the report suggests is more in prison substance abuse programs, and I would also say more in jails, because jails are not very resourced. That's where you're going to have your earlier DUI, you know, the second and thirds. They're spending their time in jail, not in prison. And if they don't have treatment resources, but it's just a holding cell, it's not really doing very much to try to address their problems. Another issue is alternative transportation. And when you live in a larger city, there are more alternatives. There's public transportation, and there's probably a greater number of either taxis or rideshare applications that you could have on your phone. So that seems to be helpful. The one thing where is not a helpful suggesting is reducing the acceptable BAC to 0.5, because the data shows 67% of fatal accidents are at 0.15 or higher, which isn't very surprising. And there's really no data showing a lot of crashes with people with BAC of 0.05 to 0.08. So that doesn't seem to really do anything other than be a quote-unquote feel-good solution.
Deja, thank you so much for joining us and for this analysis.
My pleasure. Anytime.
That is criminal defense attorney Deja Vishni, who takes on OWI cases. She formerly taught courses in trial advocacy at Marquette University Law School and is the author of the book Suppressing Criminal Evidence. Earlier, we heard from an author of the report, Joe Pietrangelo, who's research director at the Wisconsin Policy Forum.